outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of Bravada's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson, and I want to welcome to this edition of The God Journey, COVID-infested Kyle Rice. Hi, Kyle.
Hello. Well, first of all, not infested yet, at least not
at least you don't
positively
know.
Tested. Yes, as far as I know.
You could be COVID-infested even as we talk, but...
That is true. Thankfully, to my knowledge, there's no evidence that it can be dispersed through social media, through Zoom. So I think we're okay on that one.
So you're not going to infect me and you're not going to infect the God Journey audience as they listen to this podcast later, even if you haven't.
To my knowledge, I think everybody's safe.
But you did have some exposure, right? Somebody, some contact tracing kind of.
Yeah. So I can tell you, I've definitely gotten, been a little frustrated with this whole thing and that, you know, I understand it, but this is the second time I've had to go in for COVID testing and had to do quarantine stuff. I got a phone call from a good friend of mine on Monday that I had dinner with on Friday stating that he had tested positive. And because we were having dinner together, we were sitting right next to them and we didn't have masks on. And so,
wow.
Yeah. So then the crazy thing is I work in the state of Nebraska. I live in the state of Wyoming. Nebraska considers teachers and education or educators as essential workers. And so even if I have had close contact exposure, as long as I wear a mask and stay 6 feet away from everybody and don't show any significant symptoms, I can continue to work. Well, the state of Wyoming is different than that. And so then I started to show some mild symptoms. I called my doctor. He said, nope, I want you to come in. Well, then come to find out in the state of Wyoming, there is a fine of up to $100,000 if you have a pending COVID test and are caught out socializing and completely ignoring that test or going back to work, etc.
So you went renting a room in Nebraska, are you?
I'm not sure what to do with that one, but the joys of trying to work across state lines. It's, oh my gosh, it's such a mess.
So Wyoming is taking
this whole COVID thing.
Wyoming is taking this seriously. My gosh, $100,000 fine for socializing?
Yes, if you're socializing and have a pending test,
you're
up to $100,000 fine.
So your dinner Friday night, your friend could be in some risk. Was that in Wyoming?
He was in Nebraska.
Oh, he was. Were you in Nebraska?
I was in Nebraska.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. So he's off the hook if he had a pending test. So you can go teach today and be with whatever, and you couldn't play in the World Series if you tried.
That's correct.
That's amazing. Oh, my gosh. At least the World Series over. We're done with that, so that's good news.
Were you excited that you're, I guess, are they your team? Are the Dodgers your team?
No, or do you have a baseball team? I have no baseball team. It's not really a sport to me. I kind of had some time, so I watched some of the series. But, I used to play baseball when I was a kid. So I still like the sport, but I don't follow professional baseball. I just don't have time. So
okay.
I guess during the COVID, I could have, but I didn't.
Not a fan of going to the live games or anything like that?
I like going to a game with friends, yeah. Baseball is great to sit around and chat because nothing happens for minutes at a time. And you kind of – everybody screams. You kind of look up, oh, yeah, wow, what a great hit. And then you're right back into talking again. So I enjoy the socializing of that, but you know what? Mm-hmm. It's not happening these days with the whole COVID thing. So, and your wife, she had a test today too, huh? She might have this as well.
Jess came down with some pretty severe cold symptoms on Sunday, and so she went in and got tested on Monday. So we should hear back by tomorrow whether or not she's positive.
Boy, and everybody's going to wonder. So you have to announce it on the blog, I guess, if people are, well, they have COVID or not. This is a critical time. We're trying to get my book to the printers, and I need Jess, and she's been on the inactive list, I guess. So that's kind of a bummer. But
she's starting to feel a little bit better and she's starting to get on medication. So I think there is hope on the horizon. She slept for like 16, 17 hours over the last 24 hours.
Well, I know she's got some immune issues and she's got that little 10-month-old in the home. So I'm praying for all you guys to navigate this effectively, whatever it is, and get healthy. So praying for that.
I appreciate it.
Well, the election's almost over. By the time this airs, we'll be down to just a few days left. But, man, it sure got turbulent the last week with if Joe Biden's got some financial shenanigans going on behind the scenes. That is so disappointing if it's true. Not just that, I mean, he was out of office, so maybe you have some financial thing. But then to lie about it, if he did, and it's too early to know because nobody's – It's amazing that the mainstream media hasn't even done any research into it. Like, we don't want to know. Don't talk to us. We're not going to, you know, we're just going to. They're finally having to own up to it a little bit today. And yet still, it's going to be too late to affect the race. But
I guess I'm out of the loop. What are the reports of potential shenanigans?
Oh, he's been involved with his sons and they've been brokering his political leverage to work with Ukrainians and with China. And
Okay.
The question is, I mean, the son and brother have been doing it for a long time. How involved Joe is, they had this guy come out who was one of the business partners. He's got text messages and everything saying Joe was intimately involved in all this stuff. He was.
Oh, man.
Yeah. He was taking profits off of it and all that. And you go, oh, my gosh, is there anybody in Washington that can. And I just don't think there is. I just don't think there's honesty there. I think corruption runs through both parties, runs deeply. I think dishonesty runs through both parties very deeply. And if your hope is in one of the candidates winning this election for America, your hope is severely misplaced. Our hope can be in God alone and his kingdom and whether or not America survives the level of corruption. And I don't know if this is true about Joe or not. It's too early. You know, you got to give the guy the benefit of the doubt, I guess, until... But it's pretty damning that this guy's come out and he's got text, he's got evidence, he's got all kinds of stuff. And
you know, the hard part too with that is that the guy has been in political service for the last 40 years and is a multimillionaire. I mean, the people that I think of that are in public service are, say, for example, EMS workers, police, firefighters, paramedics. People who are out serving the community, they are definitely not millionaires. If you go into public service, it is expected that you're going to have trouble paying your bills unless you become a politician.
Yeah, it is sad that the amount of money involved in politics and the amount of money that somehow politicians, whether in Congress or whatever, seem to make with that through lobbying after they're in office, to all kind, and then we still give them these huge pensions. Just go.
Yeah.
How stupid are we that Americans don't just revolt against what's going on in Washington? Because it's incredibly self-serving. The whole lobbyist thing, getting money out of it, really trying to get down to issues and resolving them effectively. But I tell you, there's just no one there. There's no one home to say we care enough about this. Except the guy from Nebraska, Ben Sasse, Senator. Mm-hmm. Man, I like everything that guy says. I hope he's a genuine dude. I really do. But, you know, you find out later, anybody can be put on a front on TV. I was going to write an article one time for Leadership Journal. They didn't let me, but the title of the article was, "I'm not really a pastor. I just play one on TV," which I thought would have been a great article with some of the corruption that was going on at the time there as well. So obviously the Christian community is not immune to corruption and all that as well. So how much of it is power? And last week I was taking a walk and you texted me and said, hey, listen to this podcast. And Brené Brown, which is one of our favorites here. We've had a bunch of Brené stuff before. And if you've not heard her TED talk on shame, you just need to go back and do that. Yeah. And all you have to do is put TED talk shame Brown and you will get there. It's not real complicated, but she's just one of my favorite, just the honesty with which she speaks and all that. So you said she did some stuff on power. And then there was an interview with Joe Biden, I thought, yeah, that's incredible.
I was taken aback. I love Brené Brown's stuff, and I've been following her work for quite a while now, especially being a mental health practitioner. That's her work has been highly influential in my field. And I have to tell you, and the over a decade that I've been working in mental health or been training or learning or in higher education in mental health or psychology, I have never heard about those four concepts of power over, power within, power for, and
power with, and power to.
power with, power to, power
within, and power over.
Within and power over.
Yeah. Haven't you got a sheet in front of you? Hey, come on, you got the handout sheet, don't you? You sent it.
I got to pull up my handout sheet. I've got it. I'll get it here in a second. And can we add that to the podcast notes?
We'll add the link where they can download it from her website. Sure.
Okay, perfect.
We'll do that so people can have a look at it. She's done quite 10 years of research on power, how it plays out in the culture, and she's kind of used these four little terms, power over, power with, power to, and power within, to kind of talk about what's healthy forms of power and what's negative forms of power. Yeah?
Yeah, and it was so interesting listening to her compare and contrast the different elements. So that she kind of describes it as on one side of the pendulum, you have power over, and then on the other side of the pendulum, you have power with, power to, and power within. And it was just so intriguing because this work she's been doing long before Trump was in power, or long before he was even in the 2016 presidential nomination. And it's so intriguing to look at the differences because in this, so for our audiences, we're looking at this, the power over, it's some of the characteristics. It says,
Before we get to that, let's just kind of set the stage a little bit because she talks about dedicating her career to studying human behavior and particularly taking on this power thing. Mm-hmm. And she says, in a 1968 speech given to striking sanitation workers in Memphis, Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. defined power as the ability to achieve purpose and to affect change. That's kind of how she's defining power. And then she says, this is the most accurate and important definition of power that I've ever heard. The definition does not make the nature of power inherently good or bad, which aligns with what I've learned in my work. What makes power dangerous is how it's used. Power over is driven by fear. Daring and transformative leaders share power with, empower people to, and inspire people to develop power within. That kind of sets the stage for this chart. And then she has a whole power over is one side of the chart.
Yep.
And power with, to, and within is the other side of the chart. So what hit you about this?
I mean, the first thing that really stood out to me was what the core belief about power is. And so the power over, they believe that power is finite and that they use fear to protect and hoard power. Whereas power within, to, and with, they believe that power becomes infinite and expands when it's shared with others. That just blew me away. The fact that there's one side of the pendulum that actually considers power as not a finite commodity. That they actually view it as infinite, as something that expands, that the more we empower or encourage or help others or serve others, the more impact or the more change that can be created. I love that. And yet I'm trying to think of a modern leadership example, specifically in the political world, that embodies anything other than power over. Because you can't win unless you're demonstrating power over. At least that's been the mantra that I felt like has been typical over the last several years.
Yeah, and she used this as a lead up to an interview with Joe Biden, as we said, vice president, who's running for president. And I found that an engaging conversation about power. I found the things that he was saying, and for people that think, you know, he's an old bumbling fool who can't get his memory into a conversation, he talked for like 40 minutes with her and was lucid, and just sharing how he viewed power. Now, I don't know how genuine that is coming from a politician. So I'm cynical enough to go, okay, he said all the right things for the Brené Brown climate, and she was euphoric over stuff about vulnerability and whatever. But power over, of course, it's limited because power over, there can only be one. If you want power over people, you can't have 50 people have power over, unless they all have separate fiefdoms of power, right? Power over is always limited, and it really is the way people see the world work. A lot of people really champion power over. They just want their guy having that power, and that's the fight we're having now, right, over the next president. It's, I want my guy to have that power. I don't want that guy to have that power. And that's the struggle. We were talking about sharing the table with this college that we're helping explore the language of healing with, Bob mm-hmm. Arnita and me. And talking about how you expand the table to include people who haven't been at that table, how threatening that is to people who own the table because they see power as finite, right?
Yeah.
So if we're inviting more people to the table, that dilutes my influence. And I think this has been a struggle for people in our camp, the Christian camp, for a long time, particularly considering we had great influence over the national dialogue, morality, ethics. I mean, Christianity had that impact through almost 200 years of our history. And it's only been since 1962 or so when the culture wars allegedly began, where all of a sudden more people want to be included in the table that don't share the same views that we share on morality, on ethics, or whatever. And Christians have been really recalcitrant, by and large, evangelical Christians, to share that power with anybody because they feel like they have the right morals, and they do. In many cases, I agree with what the Bible teaches about morality. I do.
Yeah.
But the second part is, how do you force that on people who don't know the God we know, when we already know we are powerless in sin? So if I'm addicted to sin, if I've got stuff going on, I'm powerless. How do I make rules in a culture to force other people to live to a morality they can't live to without Christ in them? That's what's always seemed crazy for me. That's why I've never joined the culture wars, because I just go, okay, I'm for having a free society in which people aren't allowed to harm each other. And I'm willing to share the table because I think once you demand that people embrace your morality, you have to defend that some way, with guns, with jail time, with something. You have to make people do it or live in fear of being caught if they don't. And that's the danger.
Or fear of eternal damnation.
Fear of anything. But yeah. And I think that's why evangelicals tend to lean into this power over, which I think is why they've really embraced Trump and his bullying tactics, because he's bullying the right people. He's bullying bad media. He's bullying the deep state. He's bullying the socialist Democrats. So I like a bully up there exercising the kind of power that intimidates people, that forces its way, that lies when it needs to, because he's trying to promote control. And like you said, her research began way before Donald Trump. But I think this research, I was listening to her talk about it, I'm applying it more inside the realm of church and church life, and why power always seems to go sideways when it's absolute.
And when I was listening to her conversation about power, I was thinking of church structures, so formal religious structures, but then also I was thinking of education. And just my experiences in education and the administrators and the VPs that I've worked for that were operating in the power for or power to versus the ones that were operating in the power over, and just the differences in the cultures. I mean, I just had a conversation with my boss just this last week, and it was an incredible conversation because the entire thing was exploring, how do we use your skills and how do we empower your skills in the facets that this industry is serving in a way that is encouraging to you, but also encouraging to the people that we serve? And that was such a refreshing perspective. I almost didn't know what to do with it. I kind of was caught off guard, and I was like, well, man, this is a great conversation. I'd love to talk about this more, because you're right. It draws people into that conversation instead of excluding them. And instead of hoarding that power and saying, no, I've got to do this, or you have to fit this mold. It's, how are you as a person? What are your strengths? What are your passions? And what does that look like in the service of either people's faith beliefs and their journey with Christ? What does that look like with people's education? What does that look like with politics, which politics is creating structure and order in our society, right? Like the basic nature of politics is to help our communities run effectively to be safe, to care for the people who may not be able to be cared for, in other venues.
And that's an issue with power over. Like I heard somebody say the other day, if you don't have power over, you can't have a healthy functioning society. Because if no one's empowered over, it creates a vacuum. And then somebody will fill it. If the police are not strong in a neighborhood and righteous in whatever they're doing, then if police just withdraw, we saw some of that in the riots back in some cities where the police just withdrew from the area. Well, what ends up happening is somebody gets to be in control. A warlord, you know, with air quotes around it, warlord takes over because power creates a vacuum if somebody is not having enough power over, whether it's the police, military, whatever, to repress evil, to repress damaging people. So there's a part of that that you can't totally eliminate. You can't say, oh, let's get rid of all the police and we'll just everybody or all the military and we'll just trust nations to not want power over others. There's always people who want power over others. And if you don't restrain those in some way, and it's usually fear is the only way to restrain it. So I do look at that side of the chart going, you know, all of that's not bad. It's the people that want it that are usually bad. And that sense, even God warning Israel, you can have a king. I'll give you a king, but the king's going, you're not going to like it. Yeah. And it's going to really twist him up into some kind of caricature of himself because power, absolute power leads to indulgence, leads to exploitation of other people. You know, God's going to take your daughters into his harem. He's going to send your sons off to war. You want a king? That's what you're going to get. And they're always going to build palaces. They always build palaces. They're always opulent in their lifestyle needs, and they're excessive and indulgent in their sexual needs. That's just always true about people who get power. And I saw that even in my early days in church. I go back to some of this stuff. When I was on a staff, I felt this, nothing's being shared here. You know, no one trusts that I might have God's heart and be able to do something effective. We could multiply the power of what's going on here by sharing it more broadly with people instead of containing it under one person who has to be, who has to approve everything. And so when I became a pastor, it didn't make sense to me for my associate pastor to follow everything that I said and did. I was like, I need you to be the person God's created you to be. And if you and I have enough relationship that neither one of us is going to move independently of the other, we don't need somebody to be in charge. You can be who God's made you to be. I'll be who God's made me to be. We'll stay in fellowship and communion, and we'll have a healthy view of leadership here. But it didn't work. Because that's the guy that finally decides, no, he wants to be in charge. And he's got
wanted to fill the vacuum.
He's got enough other people around him that want him to be in charge because they want to go and do what Mark wants to do, which was have more authority over people. That's what the elders, the ones who sided with him, wanted to do. And so I'm like going, okay, see, I get that a certain amount of power over is essential in a fallen world. I would think among a genuine loving community, that wouldn't be necessary. And I do agree with Brené. She's making the observation that even in secular economic enterprises and other places, power, the transformative leaders really call power out of other people. They really empower them. But then this is George Washington, President George Washington's dilemma. Does that ask more of humans than humans are free to give, are able to give? In terms of being cohesive and working together, if somebody doesn't finally call the shots, then it seems that the lowest moral person will fill the power vacuum for themselves.
And yet...
And that's creepy.
Isn't that what... See, and this is where I really wrestle specifically with the incredibly disruptive teachings that Jesus lived out and taught. Because I'm trying to think of, because on one side, I completely agree with you, Wayne, in regards to like the power over and how in some spaces that's essential. And yet I wrestle because it's like, okay, where did Jesus ever teach about power over? Did he ever instruct us to live out power over, or did his life primarily embody power within and power to and power for?
Power with. You keep saying power for. You haven't got the right vernacular here, Kyle.
Okay, hold on. I'll pull it up.
Power with, to and within. Power for, I don't know what that means.
To and within.
There you go. That don't want to confuse people who are listening in. I know what
you
mean.
Yeah, sorry, listeners.
And I agree with you because Jesus operated in a different kingdom, right? In the kingdom of this world, in the brokenness, he didn't take on Pilate. He didn't take on Herod. He didn't take on the emperor in Rome. He didn't take on any of that stuff.
Yeah.
And he didn't try to say, well, that's where my power is going to be useful. It's not. Lots of theologians have drawn the distinction in times past, not many because it's not popular, but left-handed power, which is the power of sharing, inviting, encouraging, and providing something valuable to people versus right-handed power, which is I'll beat the crud out of you if you don't do what I want. And that Jesus was fully, and God at the cross is fully engaged with left-handed power. I'm going to win by love what fear and obedience could never win. That to me is the essence of the incarnation. God's going to win by affection. What fear could never do, which is the transformation of the human heart. The heart doesn't transform when it's power over.
So then is his, I guess my question is then, is if power over in some regards is necessary, then is the kingdom not enough for this world? Does that make sense?
Yeah, to run the world. And that's been the danger, right? When Christians have always tried to take the power, whether they took over the Roman Empire, whether they took over the king's royalties structure in France, whether there were state churches. Every time the church has tried to exercise political power, even in Puritan New England, right?
Yeah.
It's never worked out well for the church.
Yeah.
You have to become the oppressor to make what you want to have happen happen in a fallen world. If you're going to use right-handed power, where do you stop at that? Up to burning people at the stake and stretching people on the rack. And once you decide that power over is the way you're going to put the gospel in the world, then where do you stop at that? There's no place to stop. And so, yeah, the world needs it to restrain evil. Yes. Does the kingdom of God need it? No. Because the other thing where I say, yeah, power over seems to be essential in the broken world we live in. It is always corrupting. I'm not saying once in a while corrupting. It always leads to extravagance, always leads to debauchery, always leads to arrogance, always leads to the dark side. It always does. And that's why I think when they set up our nation, our early founders, they were trying to restrain that power and share that power as broadly as they could. But we're not doing well with it because our Congress is so dysfunctional that our executive is becoming way too powerful and there's no checks and balances on it.
Yeah.
Which is part of the problem. But again, a broken world. Can we live differently? And I guess you have to be willing to, you know, be slaughtered down that. I wouldn't have traded, even knowing how it ended for me at that church, I wouldn't have traded having a co-pastor and a collegiality of elders working together. Because when it worked well, it worked well.
Yeah.
But as soon as darker hearts who always thought they were doing God's will. We've got God in mind better than you've got God in mind. So we're willing to steal, kill, and destroy to get what we think is God's will. That's what they would say to this day, I'm sure. Yeah. Not about the steal, killing, and destroy. They'd say we had to do what we had to do because we had to protect what God needed to have protected. And somehow I was in the way of that, or people that wanted this more collegial kind of authority to exist. One of the statements Brené Brown makes, which I think is amazing, is how much we need this power over, we think, and there's people who love it. For every king, there's 90% of other people who want a king. That's how that works. But she said, when we want somebody to be in power over us, when powerlessness is almost the worst feeling a human has, when they feel powerless in the midst of a need, feel powerless in the midst of making good choices for their life and don't have the wherewithal to make those choices. Powerlessness is the creepiest thing that we have to endure. And yet we have this need for power over. And the only thing you can hope for is you hope for those who exercise the power over would be a benevolent leader in the sense of having all the other factors from the power within, power to, and power with. They would have all those dynamics operating. But I guess when you've got to pull the trigger, you've got to pull the trigger. And you've got to say, okay, we're going to throw these people out of that neighborhood, thinking of the one in Washington where they just kind of cleared out a whole area of town and said, we're our own state now. And the civic government just faded away, said, okay, we'll let you have it. And then had to go back in and get it. It's hard in a world when you have to pull the trigger of ultimate power, but if you do it to preserve something greater, that would mitigate it. One of the distinctions she draws power over is being right is more important than getting it right, which is such a great statement, because that's exactly when people get it wrong. Don't look here, nothing going on. I think I mentioned this last podcast, but I saw a post last week of someone saying, you can't look at Trump the man. You've got to look at the mantle of holiness God's put over him. And you go, okay, I can't see what I see. It's more important to be right than to get it right. And that's, I think a lot of Christians have fallen into that delusion in the political climate we're in. On the other side of it, she says, getting it right is more important than being right. Transformative leadership is not, I need to be right, look right, can't make a mistake, cover up anything bad that happens. No, their passion is, we've got to get this right. And if we don't have it right now, let's talk about it. Let's open the doors to the conversations that help us get it right. And that, to me, is such a great distinction. If you do have power over, and we do with police and with military and with whatever, you've got to have someone in there that sees the danger of power, that fear alone will not prevail. I mean, I just found out from my good friend, all the police in this section of California have been put on tactical alert through the election, because there's traffic about Antifa and some other group, I forget the other group, are going to cause, well, Black Lives Matter, and I don't know how true these are, but their rumors are among police that there's going to be riots in this part of California in response to the election, no matter which way it goes, I guess, or if it doesn't go the way they hope.
Either way, there it's going to be an explosion.
That's their fear, so they're going on tactical alert, because that's violence we've seen in other places. So, I mean... L.A., this is so stupid. L.A. has riots last night because the Dodgers won the World Series. They burn buildings, destroy, and that happens in every major sports town. It's not a knock on L.A. Everybody, but L.A.'s just won two of them recently, NBA and Major League Baseball. They won the World Series when only two teams in Canada and the rest are U.S. teams. That always ticks off our foreign partners who go, you guys are so arrogant. You have a World Series and no one else even gets to play in it.
Nobody else is invited.
That's how you make sure. That's power over. That's how you make sure you win, I guess. But that's the fear. And so you want to have you want to have some power over when people are acting in very dark ways. You do. But somehow you want to call out the better angels in people to say how to. And that's what language of healing is all about. So we're trying to hopefully do at the college we're working with, is trying to help people say, there's a good reason for us to take on a different conversation about race. Not the polarized conversation the culture's not having, but a more reason we can come to the table and figure out what is a problem and how best to fix it. That'd be important to do.
I don't know. I'm just really wrestling with that tension of the need or... I don't know what to do with that in regards to the need of power over in our broken world, which I can definitely understand and I can definitely appreciate. And then versus the kingdom that Jesus talks about and lives out. And man, even like the next point where she's talking a little bit about, she says that in power over, they give people someone to blame for their discomfort. Right. And how often have we seen that through history and are currently seeing it now on both sides in our nation?
Exactly.
And she says that preferably it's someone who looks, acts, sounds differently than we do. And yet then on the other side, she says that power with, to, and within normalizes the discomfort and moves away from shame and blame and towards accountability and meaningful change. And that's just so like. I mean, it would be so wonderful if on a national political level, we could move to accountability and meaningful change, wouldn't it? I mean, is it naive to still hope that's even possible?
I hope not, but it's going to take something major to change it. Because there is no accountability now on either side because we don't have a media that holds people to account. The media is advocates for one side or the other. So we don't have that. We don't have a Congress that can hold things to account because it's so driven by political agenda and political expediency. So you don't have the sense that the Congress makes a good check on the president, because it doesn't matter what president's in office. If it's Democratic, then the Republicans are against them and will drag them through impeachment hearings. If it's a Republican, the Democrats will do that. So it's not real accountability. It's just political expedience. Now, I wish we had this. Yeah. How are we going to get back to that? Because I feel like 40 years ago, we had more of that than we have now.
I would agree with that.
And I think a lot of that had to do with the Supreme Court decision that put so much money into politics. Yeah. Because depending on who's president, certain industries make a killing financially and certain other ones don't. So you've got business people in America whose futures and power is definitely shaped by who's in office. And so they're going to throw all kinds of money at it. And the Supreme Court didn't restrain that. So it just upped the ante now. And until you get money out of it, until you get the influence of people who profit from certain ones in power, and then you have some hope of accountability. You don't have media anymore that can tell us what exactly happened in this Biden story. I mean, Republicans are already playing it and probably overplaying it, just like the Democrats overplayed the Ukraine thing and an impeachment and tried that whole. I mean, it's constantly overplaying. So now you've got no one to trust. You haven't got a media you can trust to tell you the truth. You haven't got politicians who are not acting in anything other than their self-interest. And that's why I know I've talked about Ben Sasse before from Nebraska, but I've seen a couple of things he's said and go, my, this guy understands power and political power. That is, is power over, but can be restrained by these things on the power to, with, and within. It can be restrained by frame leadership as responsibility to be in service of others rather than to be served ourselves. That would be huge. That would restore public service again. You're actually serving us, not getting wealthy off the Washington environment as a politician. That's what's crazy. And if Biden has done that again, Biden has been fully on board with selling his reputation. And I know he hangs out with rich people all the time. And certainly he's got to feel like, man, I deserve my share of this. So if I can put contacts in for my relatives and that some of that money kicks back to me. And you know, if you're not running for president, it might be okay. But now you're wanting us to trust your character and you're going to put something. And again, I love all that he shared in that Brené Brown interview.
Yeah.
And then all this other information comes out and you're going, okay, it's too late to find out the truth before the election. So who's playing this up? Is it a Brett Kavanaugh thing where last minute some accusations come out? We don't have time to vet. Is it that the Republicans are playing? Or is there a serious problem here? And if there is, why didn't it come out sooner when it could be vetted? And so it just leaves us again choosing whatever I think is personally expedient for me, but putting someone in power that doesn't have a good view of power. Maybe we ought to make every leader take the Brené Power course on Dare to Lead so they could understand.
Sounds like a good option. I think, man, you just come back to, unfortunately, it comes back to a lot of the money, whether it's organized religion, whether it's school systems, whether it's politics, the corruption and the influence of finances are in this whole thing is just horrific. And yet, I don't know, I'm hoping and trying to find a way to lean into the kingdom principles that Jesus continued to call out people to, that the redemptive violence, that the power over, that there's another alternative. There's another option, that there's a way through it that involves love, that involves respect, that involves service, that involves dignity.
Oh, I think there is. And I think that's where we've got to lean in and explore that. But at a time when, because the power over, saying society needs a minimal amount of it to restrain evildoers. That's what it needs. It doesn't need that power over to put Americans at war with each other over things like race and over things like, one of the things she says here, maintain power over by demonstrating an ever increasing capacity for cruelty including shaming and bullying, especially toward vulnerable populations. And that is in leadership from within to with to and within frame leadership as a responsibility to be in service. I think she really this is a great list. I think yeah. I mean, I'm going to lean and I have most of my life. I look at this list on the right going, yeah, I've been talking about that my whole life, even before I knew what to call it. That's and that didn't come to me as some great wise thing about leadership. Just my walk with Jesus doesn't let me do certain things to people. Yeah. Knowing that I couldn't be a president of the United States. I wouldn't want to be because I'd have to yeah. do things to people. And I don't mean bullying and shaming. I just mean I've got to send young men to war and I've got to decide, yeah. drop a drone on that car and hopefully the bad people are in there. And I just, that to me, I'm not doing that. And yeah. So I think we can, you and I, we can totally live in this. And whatever authority I'm given in the world, I can embrace it with this kind of reality that Brené's talking about on the right side of this chart and really help people grow and really help mm-hmm. people have power and release them to it and share it and watch it grow and expand rather than getting caught up, which I unfortunately, a lot of what's on the left reflects the power of the Old Testament. It yeah. reflects the dominance of a king or a prophet. And somehow we Christians have missed the new covenant enough to really mm-hmm. draw our examples of leadership from the Old Testament instead yeah. of from the new. And that's a problem. So hopefully, I know we're out of time, but man, that's some great stuff for people to think about in every relationship you have with other people and how you use yeah. whatever you have, whatever power God gives you in the world, how you use it. Great stuff. I think people hopefully take a look at the chart and hopefully some of what we said will help them kind of see there's better ways to do this.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com